There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 933, April 11th. 2022, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Today we have a fully loaded Vegemite sandwich. Two wins in three races for Charles, two DNFs in three races for Max, and George Russell is second in the championship. Wow. Back to you, mate.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, how long before Horner throws Honda under his favorite bus? Has Vettel lost his mojo? Toto still completely preoccupied with Massey. Now, this week's interview is with a young, upcoming American driver, AJ Muss, and Olympian. And of course, this week we've got Loosh on the loose, and he's going to give us his take on the Australian Grand Prix. And just a reminder, we need your contributions. Keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. And this week I want to thank Don Hoag. Thank you. Keep up the good work, Don. We love you very much. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, Mr. Rogers, I am surviving in the big city. It was a very busy weekend for me. And the Australian Grand Prix turned out to be like a Chris Isaac affair for me. I watched the race at 1 a.m. live in action, Eastern Standard Time, in a blue hotel on a lonely highway somewhere in South Carolina. And more on this later. I had a very interesting meeting with a lady whose husband used to work for several Formula One teams. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But Mr. Rogers, looks like regime change is here to stay in Formula One. Never thought I would say this since the dawning of the age of hybrid era, but Mercedes is looking solid as best of the rest behind Ferrari and Red Bull. And I'm sure you are loving it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they've put in a lot of hard work, and third and fourth is not too bad. I think Fernando would have taken that. I'm very happy for Toto, but apparently Toto is lost in the world of bitterness and deep, deep, deep emotional trauma. For the rest of the guys, they're pretty happy. Hey, they'll kick that ball around the whole year while Leclerc becomes the first Monégasque champion du monde.
And how many races does he have to win before Mr. Rogers start calling him? He's lucky.
He's got a good car, and Leclerc is a great driver. And you know, all these drivers are great. We know that. We all know how great they are. The problem is luck at the beginning and luck in the middle and luck at the end. So I'm happy for Leclerc. He's a good driver. He deserves this luck and the good car that Ferrari has provided him. And there was still, I never saw the Ferrari porpoise as much as it did this last weekend. But he still won, got the fastest lap, he got pole position. He's going to be hard to stop. I don't care who's behind him. And if you remember in the previous podcast, I did mention that the Red Bull seemed a little fickle. Not quite everything there. You know, it's not quite 100% Honda anymore, but they're still there. But things are already starting to happen. And towards the end of the season, we'll get some comment from Fernando about all that. Back to you, boss.
Yes, sir. Honda is still providing them after-sales service, But I think the way Formula One is, you need constant investment, R&D, to keep up with the competition. And I think that part they may not be getting from Honda this year. But Max has a lot of talent, and if they can just give him a reliable car, the car is competitive enough where he can stick it to Charles Leclerc in a few races. But, you know, here is the situation. Last year, Carlos Sainz Jr. was looking like the senior man at Ferrari. He had more podiums than Charles. Now it seems he had some love potion number 9 tonic and is dazed and confused compared to his teammate. He still has done a good job up until the Australian Grand Prix. But looking numero dos compared to Charles Leclerc. And Charles is the new Max, or the LCH of 2007. Shall we look at some pre-race action, pre-practice and quali?
All my favorites.
Well, my hopes were very high because I am a fan of all good racing drivers, or as you said, all great drivers. And I would love to see Carlos Sainz get his first win. It will be quite a historical day because he will become the first Spaniard since Machismo to win a Grand Prix. And he set the pace in free practice one, so which was very interesting. But the highlight of the session was a scooter ride that cost Sebastian Vettel $5,000. Like, that's going to, you know, ruin his fortune. The engine in his Aston Martin went kaput shortly before the end of free practice one. After the session was over, he jumped on a Marshall scooter, but his crime was entering the track and not using the parameter road. Free practice 2, Ferrari again set the pace, but this time it was the championship leader, Charles Leclerc, who was at the top. The thrill and speed is gone for Soto and his golden goose and duckling. The young duckling was hoping to step into a winning car after a few seasons with Williams, where you are guaranteed not to win races, unfortunately, this day and age. And Mr. Rogers, while I was on this highway, you know, you drive like almost 10 hours to get to York, South Carolina. I heard a rumor through the Whispering Pines that LCH has received an invitation by text from his ex-teammate to join his club, MLC, as in Misery Loves Company. Pretty soon we will have a threesome as Seb is waiting for a text from PDR, as in Pedro De La Rosa. And now we move on to quali. What did you like in quali, sir?
I liked the part where Fernando was almost on pole.
Oh, man, Machismo was on fire, that's for sure. And then what happened?
He did an impersonation of Latifi.
Yeah, looks like he has new motivation to carry on in Formula One beyond 2022.
Apparently, the Geritol has been strengthened, and he's getting the adult dosage.
Oh, wow. Pretty impressive. Now, your favorite, LCH, was on pole for last 6 races at Albert Park. And we haven't mentioned that there was no race in Albert Park last 2 years, courtesy of COVID. But the pole for LCH was never going to happen this year. So Mr. Leclerc takes his second pole in 3 races. That Ferrari is beautiful and is fast, and I'm loving it. Teammate Carlito remains in limbo. The Mini Machismo could only qualify 9th on the grid, sharing row 5 with the original Machismo, who crashed out in Q3, but that was not his fault. That was due to gearbox issues, or so they say. You know, you can always blame gearbox or Mahle pistons or carbon industry brakes and things go wrong. What is going on with Nicholas Latifi, sir? He seems to be making an impact every event.
He made a deal with the safety car drivers because, you know, they get pretty lonely out there. So he'll get them more involved in every race. So he's very dependable and highly paid.
Yeah, by daddy. You know, speaking of safety car, Max was not happy with the performance of the safety car. And he called the green Aston Martin turtle. I'm sure Lawrence Stroll is very pleased with that. And surprisingly, he said he wants the Mercedes pace car. And I don't think he's talking about the one driven by Lewis Hamilton.
I don't think so.
Okay, now, Leclerc's pole position is Ferrari's first pole position in Australia since Kimi's debut with the team in 2007, when, of course, he went on to win the race and the championship. So second pole of the season for Leclerc and number of pole for his young career, 11. So that's good. Max, Mighty Max, I should say, qualified on the front row. He is now getting a taste of his own medicine as Leclerc is dishing out to him what Max did to Lewis last season. But I'm going to tell you something. If Max continues to have now and then issues and the car, he cannot beat the two Ferraris in quali, practice and race, and it's a big if, Lewis catches up to Max and, you know, starts dicing with the red cars, then he's going to get very, very upset on the radio. What say you?
Well, of course, we know that's going to happen. He will explode and there will be sparks. But, you know, it's very interesting. All of this is very interesting. He signs this big deal with Red Bull, but there are clauses in that, non-performance clauses that gives him an escape hatch. Where is he going to go? All of a sudden, Max, are there other teams that would take Max, Nasser?
I don't think so, because he, not him, but his, I think his father has burned bridges with Toto Wolff. So that is not happening. Charles Leclerc has a long-term contract with Ferrari. So I don't think that's not going to happen. Now, he can take some advice from Fernando Alonso, what will be a good team to go to. And he might say, you know, Haas may not be a bad deal. They have a Ferrari engine.
Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Yes, sir. Checo qualified third, sharing row two with Lando Norris and a McLaren, which was good to see. The two McLaren drivers were very giggly this weekend. LCH, undisputed king of race wins and pole positions, was on row three and a full second behind the top red car. So they got some work to do. Or we can say before W13, the grass in Toto's lawn was very green. He did out-qualify his whippersnapper teammate. Boy George qualified sixth. It is still early days in the season, but so far the expected cage rattling has not happened at Mercedes. Most likely it may happen in the second half or maybe next year. But it's going to happen sooner or later. It's just a matter of time these things happen. Changing of the guard. Now, Mick Schumacher out-qualified K-Mac, and I was happy for Mick because he's in the same spot as Carlos Sainz Jr., getting outshined by his teammate, and that cannot go too long before it gets into your head. So, were you pleased to see Mick Schumacher come ahead of K-Mac in quali, sir?
I thought it was very exciting. But K-Mac, you know, he does perform during the race. You got to give it to him. And Haas still has some issues. I think they look to be a possible midfield pack, but they have some issues. But still, you're right. Mick has to save his career in this season, or it's sayonara, and he'll be off to making shoes.
Oh, shoes by Schumacher. That could be a good slogan.
Bravo.
And who would be his first high-profile client? Probably somebody from Spain, I think.
Indeed.
Yes. Okay. Okay, now, as far as the race is concerned, your thoughts?
It was a bit processional for me. I mean, I liked some of the dicing between Stroll and Bottas, and we got to talk about Albon, but, I mean, the guy didn't pit for the whole race, so being P10 is not that surprising, and he pits on the last lap. I didn't understand any of that, but it is what it is. And, of course, Fernando, for me, once again, he did a late pit stop, finishes, what, 17th? I'm at a complete loss on why you would want to be in Formula One finishing 17th. So I'm scratching my head, and I'm trying to figure all this out, Nass. It's getting really complicated.
Yes, you are correct, sir. And the thing is, you know, both he and Sebastian Vettel, they are not short on cash. So we will come to that in a moment, though. Okay, last time Formula One raced in Albert Park was in 2019, when Valtteri Bottas won the season opener for Mercedes and made his famous statement on the radio, "To whom it may concern, F you," which was very, very surprising. Most people said that it was referred to, there was a company called Kempe, I believe is a welding company in Finland. And the owner is a very passionate fan of motor racing and, of course, a rich gentleman. And he had dropped, his statement was, he could not support a driver who does not win a single race while his teammate wins a championship. And who can blame him? So, sir, as far as Charles Leclerc is concerned, two wins and a second from three races, it's perfect start to become Prancing Horse's first world champion winning jockey since 2007. And he now has four Grand Prix wins, all from pole positions. Now, what I like about him, and I'm sure it may change when other people catch up, especially Max, as they have a history going back. So far, Charles has been cool as Naren Karthikeyan under pressure from the ultimate hustler, the aforementioned Max Verstappen. He survived more than one safety car restart, which was very expensive because, very impressive I should say, because that's when Max can be very, very dangerous. But despite a close call, he was able to keep the raging Red Bull behind. Now this is very impressive, Mr. Roger. After only three races, he has a 34-point lead in the championship, which is a very big margin at this stage of the season. But you know, it's a long, long road to Abu Dhabi, and there will always be danger lurking not only from Max, but also from back from the dead, W13. And we got a little glimpse of that in this race. But still, you know, ways to go. You're not going to close a 1 second gap in one race or 2 weeks. His teammate Carlos Sainz, last season, for me, he was the most impressive driver. And there was even chatter on the web that Carlos may take over the role as number one driver at Ferrari. Because in his first season, he kept his cool and was very impressive in terms of performance and results against Charles Leclerc in 2021. But so far, this season, he has been in the shadows of his teammate, and this is not a happy tune for man from Madrid. He might be having a flashback to when he was teammate to Max Verstappen at Toro Rosso, where he did a pretty good job, I have to say, especially if you're a teammate to Max. Carlos did a very good job when they were teammates. Now, going into the kitty litter on lap 2, in a car that is podium material, was not what the doctor ordered. And his teammate has a huge lead over Max, even though George is second in the championship at this stage. It is looking more and more likely Sainz will soon be listening to Smedley Symphony from the Ferrari Orchestra saying, "Charles is faster than you." Now that is in case Carlito is running ahead of Leclerc in a race, which I'm sure is going to happen sooner or later. I will be very surprised if it does not throughout the season. Next race is on Ferrari home soil, Imola Autodromo. This is about an hour's drive from Maranello. If Leclerc goes 3 wins out of 4 races, that will put Carlito under tremendous pressure. And as we all know, the pressure from Italian media is never kind. I hope Sainz's day will come and we will see him take his maiden victory for Maranello this season. He does not want to be Bottas when he went winless while the teammate took the championship, which will be very, very pathetic. Now we come to Numero Dos in the Carrera, in the race, Senor Sergio Perez. You know, sir, I don't know why, but the way he's going against Max, very competitive, it's taken me back to his days with Sauber. Do you remember how good he was in tire management and how close he came to winning the race in Malaysia over some guy? I don't recall his name now, but I'm sure you do.
I do. It was an outstanding job. Good for Perez.
Yeah, he has emerged as the Mexican machismo. And what is even more impressive, he has been able to please his masters, Mr. Horner and Dr. Marco, which is near impossible to do for most drivers. And what I like is he's also developing a good habit of having clean but competitive dicing with Sir Hamilton. And according to Mr. Horner, Perez was unlucky again due to safety car. So the luck factor comes up even when you're not winning races. Interesting. Now Max Verstappen, Perez's teammate, last year, he had one headache, and it was a pretty big headache called Lewis Hamilton. This year, he has two headaches, a fast Ferrari and an unreliable Red Bull. Second one is an even bigger headache, I think. Still more than 20 races to go. Leclerc is not out of the red zone, despite driving a red-hot Ferrari. both Max and Lewis have what it takes to overcome a 30-point deficit or even more. LCH has proven that not only against Nico Rosberg, but also against Mighty Max. Christian Horner on two DNFs for his Dutch master said, and I quote, "I'd rather fix a fast car than try and make a reliable and slow one fast," end quote. And which is very true. If you have a slug, then you got a huge problem. Next, we have George Russell. George Russell, there was a Mercedes driver on the podium, but it was the English whippersnapper, not the Royal Highness. At least for this race, Lady Luck changed cars in the Mercedes garage. George was able to pit under a safety car period and get the jump on LCH. There is still more work to be done in Brackley, and I will not be surprised if silver arrows are shooting straight for the Prancing Horse and Red Bull for victory before the summer break. In the closing laps of the race, LCH was very close to DRS range to get on the podium, but said his car was experiencing overheating problem. Now, a lot of teams are complaining about overheating and fingers are being pointed at the new type of fuel these cars are using these days. But we'll find out in due course of time what the real issue is. Now, good for Mercedes, both cars in the points on a day Max and Sainz failed to score. That should ease the pain. And it's hard to believe. I could not even believe when they mentioned on the telecast that George Russell is second in the championship. Do you think he can win the championship, sir?
No, not a chance. But at least he'll come in, you know, maybe third or fourth. Things are going to happen. This is still a young season. It's still a baby. Let's just cradle it and hope for the best.
Indeed. Now, the two Mercedes cars were followed by two McLaren cars. Lando Norris ahead of local chap Daniel Ricciardo in fifth and sixth, respectively. Esteban Ocon was the only Alpine in the points in seventh. His Machismo teammate was 10 places behind and a lap down. Bottas was eighth for Alfa Romeo, and his Chinese teammate Guan Yu Zhu or Guan Yu Zhou was the first man out of the points in 11th. And the good thing is Guan Yu did finish the race, so the meter is on, he's piling the miles, so that's good for him. Pierre Gasly was 9th for Alfa Tauri. His Sporty Mau teammate Yuki Tsunoda was 15th and also a lap down. Now, to use an aviation jargon, I think Yuki has reached his service ceiling and he is no zero fighter, so I do not expect him to shoot down Gasly and retain his seat for next season. With Honda gone, I think Red Bull will say sayonara to Tsunoda and they will bring in Kiwi Liam Lawson to replace him for next season. And I say this as a, what I see, a racing possibility or a probability, a reality. Not, it's not my wish that somebody fails and some, you know, so somebody else can succeed. So we will see how it, Now, final point from 10th place, you already talked about Alexander Albon. Now, first point of the season for both the driver and Williams. And like you said, he then started from the back of the grid and made the pit stop to change to soft tires as per rules on with one lap to go, one or two laps to go. But you know, the important thing about that is he was able to maintain decent amount of grip on the tires. Otherwise, you know, to go such a long stint, the way racing drivers are, you know, their cars are slipping and sliding in the last few laps. So I think he did a very good job and he was elated after the race. And it's very good for the team also. And I hope his team treats him to some fine pad thai and coconut ice cream when they get back to the base in Grove, jolly old England. Do you remember our restaurant of choice, Thai Barn in Sunnyvale?
Yes, L10.
L10, I still remember your favorite meal there. Okay, sir, now we come to Sebastian Vettel. This is a sad story here now. The four-time world champion made his 2022 debut in Albert Park after missing the first two races due to COVID. It is always sad to see heroes of the sport languish at the back or in non-competitive machinery. Not too long ago, the same driver won 9 races in a row and finished with 13 victories for the season. His race was over on lap 23 when he hit the wall of voodoo. Like Machismo, as we already said, Seb has nothing to prove and both have stamped their authority and will be remembered as one of the greats of Grand Prix racing, whether they win a race again or not, let alone a championship. So what they are trying to prove with Aston Martin and Alpine, only they know. I would rather see Nando posting a photo of both of them on beach chairs from Bora Bora, so two seats in Grand Prix racing can go to two young, very deserving drivers. And I think that will be a very good thing. Final thoughts on the race, sir?
I thought it was a good race. Like I said, a little processional. Overtaking was a little bit tough, but also we have to hit on, they changed the FIA behind the safe car rule. Now, you know, they call it the Verstappen rule, where Verstappen would be alongside and they'd be going back and forth and blowing kisses to each other. Well, they can't do that. Now it's pretty much single file, which I'm not crazy about because I thought it should be in pairs, you know, just like the way the grid starts. But it is what it is, and we had good, clean restarts with our favorite Latifi safety cars being called out. Other than that, great race, and I can't wait to hear what Lush has to say.
Yes, yeah, speaking of Lush, let's bring him into the Palatial Studios. A report from Land Down Under.
G'day, Clark and NASA. This is Lucien Byfield reporting on the Australian Grand Prix. And this race was a perfect example of the imbalance that a non-parity series will provide. Suddenly, Charles Leclerc is being rewarded for his talent purely because he finally has a good car. What this proves is that the car is the dominant factor in Formula One and has always been. Sure, a driver makes a difference. We have seen this in other dominant eras, but Leclerc is not suddenly Charles 2.0, a statement he rejects. Rather, he is not having to overdrive in a crap car and is getting rewarded by the simple fact that as an overall package, Ferrari is suddenly a good package all round, and therefore he can show off his amazing talent that was obvious in the junior categories and also early on in his rookie Formula One year in Sauber, Alfa Romeo. Formula One has sadly never proven who is the best driver of a generation, in my opinion, as the cars have never been equal. Suddenly Charles looks amazing, but he has not suddenly become amazing. To parallel this, in the music scene, when an artist or band makes it, they are often heralded as an overnight success, but there is no such thing. Anyone who succeeds in any arena has honed their skills for years, possibly decades, and once the stars align, so to speak, they are afforded the chance to shine. Yet, the talent they display didn't suddenly materialize or mature. Often it has been waiting in the wings, hoping for an opportunity to shine. Charles, Max, George, Lando, and so many more on the grid could already have multiple Grand Prix wins under their belt, and titles, had they been in the right car at the right time. Lewis Hamilton is often referred to as the GOAT, but all he has done is found himself in the right place at the right time in an era of reliability, more races, and a dominant team. Therefore, his statistics fool the masses, for the average person is sucked in by success. This is not to say Lewis ain't any good. He is special and a major talent, whether we like him or not. But F1 proves year in, year out, that unless you are in a dominant team, you are nowhere. Look at Mansell in 88. The guy who had shone in 85, fought for the titles in 86 and 87, but due to Honda doing the dirty on Williams, both the team and driver were suddenly nowhere. Look at Senna, never a true title contender up until that point. Then suddenly he wins the title in the best car. I could go on. Again, for those that misunderstand, this is not saying Hamilton or Senna owe all their success to the car, for anyone with half a brain can tell that they have been two of the most special drivers we have ever seen, but they only won titles once they were in dominant machinery. This is a fact, not a biased or judgmental opinion. Seasons like 1986 and 2007, which gave us unlikely champions in a sense, due to the most dominant teams allowing in-house fighting, are the exception, not the rule. In Formula One, you need a top car, usually the top car, to win races regularly and titles. Charles has found himself in this position, with a teammate struggling who has not had the confidence boost in his career of securing at least one pole and one win, while his old teammate, Max Verstappen, has 21 wins and a title. If the Ferrari number one, Charles Leclerc, continues this year in the way he has started the season, he will be champion easily. And then he will suddenly be elevated in people's estimation, which is nonsense. He was the same talent last year, he just didn't have the car. I know this sort of thing can be paralleled in the music scene, for there are a ton of musos as good, if not better, than those supposedly succeeding. But they are not considered, as they simply have not been in the right place at the right time, or given the same breaks and opportunities as those who are succeeding. Trust me, I know some truly amazing world-class musicians who could easily outplay and outsing some very successful people that we highly regard. Life is not fair. It doesn't always reward talent, hard work, perseverance, etc. Now, many rate Lewis as the GOAT. Many rate Alonso as the best overall. Yet they are not winning. So, have they lost their talent? No, not at all. They are simply not in the best car. Formula One is a flawed and unfair sporting model that creates legends out of luck and out of balance. I love racing. I love Formula One. But sometimes it is just like a super hot woman with no personality. Sure, we love the glamour and are fooled by it too often, but at the end of the day, it can lack some substance. Look at Max. Suddenly, he is down in the points and not really looking like he is in title contention. So, has he lost his talent? Has he fallen from grace? No, not at all. But many will think so, purely based on results, that are nothing to do with him or his talent. So, pecking order aside, what did Australia deliver for the Formula One global audience? Well, for me, they added track modifications that made the Melbourne track a much faster circuit than in the past, and one that looked far more European. With some opened up apexes and a significant chicane removed, the car's engines really got to stretch their legs, but the porpoising that was seemingly being eased away slowly was back in full force, particularly from Ferrari and Mercedes. And to my mind, this is really dangerous. Personally, I love the Melbourne track, although traditionally it has been known as an outlier of a circuit, where form is not always a guide to what we expect for the rest of the season. But what we did see in Australia this time, with Charles ahead of a chasing Max, was actually the same thing we saw in the first two races of the year. So, Melbourne, with its track modifications, may now be a circuit that we can actually take some form guide from. And if so, well, Charles is looking good for the title at this early stage. Now to Mercedes. For a team that keeps saying they are in serious trouble and have no answers, it has to be said that they are punching above their weight, even if their relatively good results have been, in part, due to others' misfortunes. Clearly, they do have some answers, as they are making small strides, and, in qualifying, though again helped by certain notable misfortunes of Sainz and Alonso, they proved that they clearly are going to be a force to be reckoned with in a short amount of time. I would not write off wins and a late title challenge from the Silver Arrows, but it would also require Charles to have a couple of bad races, as he is streaking away at this stage, but it's only round 3 of a possible 23 race calendar. To see George get his first true race podium was a great thing for him and for the sport, and it will be the first of many, I have no doubt. Oh, should I mention Stroll? Nah. As we leave Australia, it is good to look back at the weekend as a whole, and us Aussies are always treated to top quality events, with plenty of off-track entertainment, like the amazing Royal Australian Air Force roulettes demonstrations, the Tech Talk opportunities new to this year, and our own In the Fast Lane podcast live presentations with many special prominent Formula One guests. Of course, there had to be those pesky DJs taking opportunities away from real musicians, but some real music, if you can call modern music that, was to be heard too. Gee, I'm sounding old. Of course, Formula One was not the only form of racing we were to witness, as there were many on-track support categories like our own Aussie V8 supercars, known simply now as supercars. And boy, did we get action from day one, with crashes ensuring slight track modifications and some amazing racing, including some testosterone-fueled biff and barge between some of our top drivers, Mostert and Courtney, notably. Shane Van Gisbergen, a true world-class champion, is proving again and again what a talent he is, and I just wish he had done a Scott McLaughlin and gone international while young enough, for he would win in whatever car he sat in, and for the odd international events he has actually driven in, he has always proven this every time. Some of the other categories were S5000, which is Australia's new generation of open-wheel racing, and, as always, we had the ever-popular Porsche Carrera Cup. The Shannon Historic Demonstration is always a crowd-puller, and then there were the Targa Florio parades. Ah, what a feast. Australia really knows how to put on a good show, and after 2 years missing from the record books, they made up for it with a massive attendance over the 4 days. But sadly, it has to be said, the main event, the Formula One race, was not that exciting. But you can't have it all, can you? Still, at least it wasn't Ham Verbot. Anyway, ciao for now, my F1 Weekly familia. This is Lucien Byfield signing off from Lush on the Loose in South Australia. Oh, and yes, I did cook up a barbecue for me and a couple of friends. And no, I didn't throw another shrimp on the barbie. I still have no idea where that Aussie concept came from.
Lush, keep up the good work. Outstanding. Nas, you want to give us those championship points?
Yes, sir. They say numbers don't lie. So let's take a look at the championship standings. Charles Leclerc leading with 71. Russell next, 37. Carlos Sainz, 33. Sergio Perez, 4th with 30. Number 5, Lewis Hamilton, 28 points. 6th, Mac Verstappen 25, 7 Ocon 20, and let's see what else we have. 8 is Norris 16, a joint 9th Magnussen and Bottas with 12 points, 11th is Ricciardo 8 points, Gasly 12th with 6 points, Yuki Tsunoda 13th with 4 points, Fernando Alonso 2-time world champion is 14th with 2 points, and of course all because of the package, we all know that, and Guan Yu Zhu and Albon have 1 point each, and both drivers from Aston Martin have not opened their score. You know, Mr. Roger, after three races, Max is a whopping 46 points behind championship leader. Ferrari will be well advised to keep their prancing horses awake and alert, or they may be surprised by Butch Cassidy and the Dutch Sundance Kid, and raindrops will keep falling on their head, as it did in the Nando and Sebastian Halcyon days. Question for you, 46 points, is it a done deal for Leclerc, you think?
It could be, because unfortunately for Max, I think the gremlins are going to continue, especially when we get into the middle of the season, before the summer break. And if he has one or two more DNFs in this business, it's done.
Yeah, I think that the reliability issue is the biggest enemy for Max at this time. But I will tell you, Max himself had a 30-plus point lead over Lewis last year, and Lewis was able to overcome that. So 46 points with 20-plus races to go is not a safety net against somebody as gung-ho as Max or even Lewis if they can get that car going. But it's a very comfortable... What's going to hurt Max now if Carlos Sainz wins a race or Lewis or George can come in between him and Leclerc, and that, you know, the point spread will keep on increasing. But still a long way to go. Things will change, I'm sure. Okay, so now, sir, as far as the constructor numbers are concerned, Ferrari leading, which I'm sure a lot of people are happy about, 104 points, Mercedes second, 65, Red Bull with Red Bull powertrain, a.k.a. Honda engine, third, 55, McLaren, 24, fifth is Alpine Renault, 22 points, Sauber Alfa Romeo / Ferrari engine, 13 points, Haas with Ferrari engine, 12 points on seventh, and the Alfa Tauri has 10 points on eighth, and ninth is Williams with Albon's 1 point. So these points can be very important, you know, down the road. Okay, and of Ferrari's 104 points, 71 have been scored by Leclerc. So he is really doing what you call an outstanding job. And sir, an outstanding job was done by the Australian public. Apparently, they set a new track record for a Formula One race weekend. I got the impression by listening to other podcasts that the previous record was last year at Kota, over 400,000. But this one was touching around 420,000 to 440,000 for the whole weekend. So very impressive. And I'm sure the Aussie mates were missing the Formula One race for 2 years. So I'm very happy to hear that. And and now, can you imagine how many people will show up at Imola with Ferrari coming to town, winning two of three races and leading the Drivers and Constructors Championship?
Many, many people.
Which brings me to your favorite question. Who's going to win Imola?
Ha! Sacré bleu tous les jours, monsieur. You know, while I think about that, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Racing season is in full swing, so hopefully our interview sessions will also get into high gear. And today we are very pleased to present a conversation with Mr. AJ Maas. This is a nice story of inspiration, fight back, and seeking high level and high dangerous thrills. And he's an Olympian and now racing in the Michelin Pilot Challenge. I would like to thank him for his time and also to his PR rep, Ms. Ina Lappin, and this conversation was recorded a few days ago through the wonders of Skype technology. So, AJ, thank you so much, and hope to see you at the races.
You have a very, very interesting story and very inspiring, too. But we shall start with your name. AJ is synonymous with racing. In your case, is the interest in racing coming from Dad, or is this something you picked up on your own?
My father was into racing. He liked MotoGP bikes.
Really?
And he liked cars, but he liked MotoGP bikes. And I think I just always loved racing as a kid as well. I mean, who doesn't like to go fast and speed? I mean, I'm an adrenaline junkie, so anything to go fast, I'd love it.
Yeah, I love MotoGP also. Have you developed any interest in wonderful bikes from Ducati or Yamaha and Honda?
I like them all. I mean, I used to ride bikes a little bit, but I got off them just because how dangerous they are on the road. I liked the R1 that I rode a lot.
Cool. And I understand you did some karting or went to some karting events with your dad when you were young?
Yeah, when I was really young, I did like, I think it was like the 1.5 horsepower karts for like a year. Nothing crazy, just like introductory to stuff. And then I was so busy snowboarding, I didn't have time to kart anymore.
Now, was it love at first sight with the speed and karting, or it took some time for you to get involved in it?
Karting, I don't remember it. I was so young. I think as I got older and was snowboarding, my injuries were really high, and I was in and out of surgeries and hospitals. I was like, you know what? Like, I think it's time to back off a little bit and focus on something a little safer, per se. Less direct impact on my body. And I just loved cars. I mean, I always had fast cars. And I was drifting for fun. I competed in Formula Drift professionally. And I met my manager at the Indy 500 when I was there with a friend of mine who was good friends with Marco Andretti. And he was going to help me with my career, and he helped me with my career by bringing me into IMSA.
Well, that was my next question, that you got the racing bug hanging out with Marco Andretti at the Indy 500. What was your first impression of the big crowd and the race itself?
So when I went to the 500, it was the same year I went to the Olympics. The Olympics is a big venue. I mean, it's one of the most televised events in the world. But when I went to the 500, there's just, it's this, from what I understand, it's the largest single day sporting event in the world. The atmosphere is insane. In the snake pit, the crowd, just the noise, it's absolutely insane. I'm not a huge oval fan guy, but it's the 500. I mean, how can you not love the 500, the Indy 500, you know?
Incredible. Have you seen the museum there?
Yeah, we were just there 3 weeks ago. I was just there, actually.
Yeah, the museum itself is worth a visit. And you know, you mentioned largest single day event before the IndyCar split, and it may still be true today, but definitely before the Indy split, the second largest one-day event, believe it or not, used to be the first day of qualifying at the Indy 500. So this is just an American institution, and man, I get goosebumps just about talking about this race. Incredible.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I always wanted to see the Indy 500. I want to see Monaco. And this year I'm going to the Singapore. I've never been to Monaco, but I am going to the Singapore Grand Prix this year, which I'm excited to go see.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I've never been to the Singapore Grand Prix, but having been to the Malaysian Grand Prix, you might want to take a portable air conditioner with you.
Yeah, we're going. Luckily, I'm going with a friend of mine, and we're in a box, uh-huh. So too bad, but yeah. I know it's hot.
Oh, man, it's hot, and it's humid like you won't believe. Okay, this year you are racing in Michelin Pilot Challenge. Tell us how the first two races went for you at Daytona and Sebring.
We showed a lot of pace, and we showed a lot of good progress. I mean, I qualified P2 in Daytona. Unfortunately, we had a mechanical on the green lap, and all I was able to do was take green flag, so that one kind of hurt. Qualifying on the front row, we had a team front row lockout, and on the green flag wave, I lost power immediately, and we had to retire the car. Sebring, we had a really good race in the beginning there as well. We were running 1, 2, 3, 4 with the Hyundais, and we gapped the pack by 10, 12 seconds. The lead pack of us four Hyundais gapped the pack, and we were kind of just running in a team train up front. And then, unfortunately, towards the end of the race, we got hit really bad, and we lost our front right. But it's been... Our program's been phenomenal. The BHA and Brian Herta and the Elantra NTCR car is a phenomenal car. I think there's been a lot of hype and a lot of growth in the touring car world and in just GT cars in general. I mean, the fields are stacked everywhere this year. And the GT4 class, the gentleman drivers haven't been the greatest we've seen, and not in the nicest way to put it. So it's been a little difficult dealing with the back of the pack of the GT4 cars. And it's learning more how to deal with traffic even more. And it's not dealing with traffic with experienced drivers. It's dealing with traffic with unexperienced drivers, which has been a learning curve and a little difficult because they're unpredictable. That makes sense.
You mentioned Brian Herta. Obviously, he had a very successful career, and his son is doing well. Have you received any driver coaching from Brian, or have you ever employed a driver coach?
Yeah, so as much as Brian Herta is the team owner, he is a mentor to all of us. He helps us a lot with the mental aspect of how to direct driver coaching with, like, line and data. He's a little busy. But he speaks to all of us. He's a mentor to us. He really helps with mental outlook, how to approach the race, let the race come to you. Don't fight for it all the time. He's really hands-on with keeping the drivers in the right mental space and helping us progress as a unit and as a team. Colton was around during Daytona because he was racing. He helped out a bunch. We were able to bounce ideas off Colton. I do have a driver coach. His name is Buddy Rice. He's an Indy 500 champion.
Yeah, I know Buddy Rice.
Yeah, Buddy Rice is my driver coach. I drive with him once a month for 2 days down at his facility. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that help me in my career, and Brian is one of the huge parts, and Buddy Rice has also been a big part. Brian has guided me since I started IMSA. I've been with Brian, not directly with his program, but under the supervision of Brian, if that makes sense, in Hyundai.
That's good. Now, in terms of, if I may ask, in terms of racing is very expensive, you mentioned Hyundai. Do you have some support from Hyundai factory, or are you just doing it all on your own?
Yeah, so I'm driving for the Hyundai factory program. So we have BHA and Brian Herta is the factory program. So we do get a lot of help from Hyundai. They invest heavily in this program. I do have outside help, which you have to have, not being a fully factory supported driver. Mm-hmm. I'm factory supported, but I'm not a full factory driver. So it's like, it's kind of, the factory does a lot for us, and without them, I don't think I could drive at all. Hyundai definitely helps out with the program, and then I do have private funding on the side.
Good. Okay. Now, the Daytona banking is so impressive. You know, I'm based here in Tampa, Florida, so I go to Daytona 24 hours every year, Sebring, the IndyCar race. But the Daytona banking is so impressive, just to look at it as a spectator. What is the feeling going flat out on the banking in your Hyundai?
It's crazy. I mean, it just sucks you in. It really, you plant the car. If you, like, touch down into the apron, like, if you're on the bank and you touch down the apron, you almost pull a wheel off the ground. It's sketchy. Drafting's very important in Daytona. It's kind of, it sucks the car down into the ground, so we can't run the as low to the ground as we would like with the splitters. But it's wild. It's a wild feeling just to be planted that hard into the ground. And then when you go to pass someone, normally you got to go the high side. And it's like a cool feeling, if that makes sense. Like looking down at the car to your left. You're not side by side. You're looking down at them.
Yeah, very impressive.
And with side drafting, it could get a little hairy sometimes.
Yeah. What are your goals and expectations for rest of the season?
My goals for the rest of the season is try to podium out. These mechanicals, us getting hit, has not done well for us in the aspect of winning a championship. It's not out of the question. It's still there to be had, but we definitely need to start winning out. We need to start getting consistent podiums. So our goal, me and Ryan, is consistent podiums for the rest of the season.
And where would you like to race in 5 years? IMSA sports cars, or do you have plans for Indy or NASCAR action?
IndyCar is not plausible for me. I don't have the experience, the time in the car, or the budget. It's just not there for me. NASCAR, yeah, it'd be cool to do one-off events, some road race, some road course stuff. But I'm a sports car driver. I love driving sports cars. It's where I really enjoy being, so I don't really see myself having a full career outside of sports cars. But in my 5-year goal is to be a full-time WeatherTech driver and hopefully WEC.
Yeah, that would be great. You know, if you get a chance to race anything at Spa, Le Mans, or the 14.2-mile Nürburgring, I will highly, highly recommend.
Yeah, the Spa and Le Mans are my two tracks I like would die to drive. They're phenomenal. Nürburgring, I don't know if I have the brain capacity to remember everything.
Yeah, you know, some years ago, a friend of mine, he's actually a listener of our podcast in Netherlands. He was kind enough to give me a lap of the Nordschleife, and I requested him to go slowly so I can really suck up the track. And it's just a beautiful facility. Have you seen any European tracks?
I've been to the Red Bull Ring in Oostenrijk. Mm-hmm. I was there for the F1 race with a friend with Red Bull. So I've been there. I've never driven it. Barcelona? I've driven Barcelona on a simulator, on a F1 simulator.
Oh, wow.
So I was at AVL over in Austria. Do you know AVL over in Austria?
APL, what are they?
AVL. They're the ones that helped develop all the machining and the engineering for Red Bull to take over Honda's motor program.
Okay.
They designed all their in-house machining and all their equipment.
Yeah.
They did a lot of testing for Ferrari.
Wow. No, I know there are some very big engineering companies in Austria, but I don't think I'm familiar with this one.
I was at their facility in Graz in Austria, and I was able to get into a multi-million-dollar simulator where it has a full cockpit F2 car, and I was able to drive Barcelona, which was awesome. I really like the European tracks.
Now, Graz is the hometown of Dr. Marco. Did you get a chance to have a Red Bull with him?
I stayed at his hotel, but not to meet Dr. Marco.
Yeah, he owns a few nice hotels. Yeah, that's very good. Was the hotel nice? I understand he has some like high-end hotels.
Yeah, it was a very nice hotel. I mean, it had one of the Red Bull's front wings at it. It has some memorabilia from the Red Bull cars there. A friend of mine who works over at AVL, who is a Formula 2 driver, knows Dr. Marco. And, like, we saw his office, but I never got to meet Dr. Marco. I just got to meet Mr. Mateschitz.
Oh, yeah?
The owner of Red Bull, but...
Well, that's good. How did you manage that? Because he's kind of reclusive.
Yeah, I'm a 2018 Winter Olympian, and I was at a party, and he was there.
Oh, that's good. A cool guy?
Yeah, nice guy. Older gentleman, super, super nice. Really humble.
Really humble?
He's humble, yeah.
Oh, that's very impressive. Very impressive. Yeah, that guy has done very well. You know, last week I was in Europe, and I went to the other Austrian track, Salzburg Ring. And I was talking to the director there, and I asked him, I asked as a joke, I said, did Dietrich Mateschitz ever try to buy this? And he started laughing. He said, yeah, before they did the track they have now, they said they came here, but there was some farmers around the area. They did not want to give up any land, so he ended up buying the old Oosterreichring. So they've done a very good job.
Yeah, the Red Bull Ring, the valley and the area that the circuit is at, Mr. Mateschitz owns a bunch of castles and real estate, and he actually spends a lot of money in the infrastructure of that village and the town surrounding it. He buys old castles and upkeeps them, and he really keeps the heritage around the valley.
Yeah, that's very impressive. Okay, now, before you got into, what I call cars turning right and left, you were involved in drifting, which you mentioned earlier. Tell us a little bit about that experience, and how different is the talent required racing a car around a track compared to drifting?
They're actually very similar in aspects. Our lines are a little different, but when it comes to car control, I feel like drifters and my drifting experience actually helps me a lot with having car control. I'm used to putting a car in a situation it's not meant to be in. And a lot of people think that our drift cars have no grip. They actually have massive amounts of grip. Our cars run 7-second drag race passes. They're extremely grippy. And being able to flick a car and keep it at angle, it takes a lot of car control. And actually, I think it really helped me understand how to drive to the tire and drive and maintain a tire really well, because I have extremely good feeling for the tire. Because I know what it's like to bake a tire off. I know how to reserve tire, how to hold on to the tire. Where in road racing, where it really helps me is, one, in the wet. I don't get nervous. When a car gets loose, I know how to deal with it. When it gets loose and steps out, it doesn't bother me. I don't panic. And I can really know how to save the tire and not overwork the tire. I'm really good at long stints on keeping the tires under me, because I have a really good feeling for the tire in the road.
That's good. Now, many great racing tracks here in the U.S., Laguna Seca, Road America, Watkins Glen, the Cota track in Austin is wonderful. What is your favorite track here in the U.S., and do you like street racing?
I've never been on a street course yet, so I'm really intrigued to get on it. I think I'll do very well on them because I have zero fear. I don't have any fear in me. Like, nothing we're doing scares me ever. I really, really want to get on a street course. The Michelin Pilot Challenge doesn't go to one. But I think, like, if I had to pick a street course to be able to drive, it would probably be probably Long Beach. I really want to drive Long Beach. But my favorite all-around track, it's a tie between two. It's really a tie between three. Watkins Glen, Road America, and Laguna Seca are my three favorite. I can't really, like, there's parts of each track that I love.
Oh, yes.
Like, Road America, I really love the back, like Canada Corner, Black Kink, and the Carousel. I love it there. And then in Laguna Seca, I really like turn six, and then turn six up into the corkscrew.
Oh, yes.
Down out of the corkscrew is my favorite.
Oh, yes.
And then Watkins Glen, I love turn one to 3, 4, 5 before the bus stop.
Yeah.
If you put all three of those together, it'd be the world's best track.
Yes, yeah, they are great facilities, no question about it.
Yeah.
Now, before motorsports, you were involved in snowboarding and, you know, represented the U.S. in Winter Olympics in South Korea, which is obviously very impressive. Tell us about your snowboarding life and achievements, please.
Yeah, so I'm a 2018 Winter Olympian. I competed for the U.S. I've had a fairly successful career in snowboarding. I've been U.S. national champion for 7-8 years consecutively. I've been the number one ranked U.S. man for the last 13 years or 12 years. Don't quote me, but it's somewhere within 10 to 13 years. And I am the most winningest alpine snowboarder in a single season in the Norm circuit ever. So I've had a pretty good snowboarding career. I'm coming to the end of it due to injuries, and my body's kind of taking a hit. So snowboarding will be a love of mine. It is something I've done for a long time, but it is time for me to start to venture into one of my other passions and my goals in life. I'm a very goal-driven individual, so kind of reached my goals of what I want to accomplish in snowboarding. And now I have my mind set on the goals I want to accomplish in motorsports.
So we can call you Tom Brady of snowboarding then.
If you can proclaim yourself to be the GOAT, you aren't the GOAT. People can call me whatever they want, but I prefer to be as humble as I can and just work towards my goals.
Okay, that's good. Okay, now this is where we want your feedback and see what a story and inspiration it is. And I believe the year was 2014. A simple shoulder surgery became a life and death issue for you, and you turned it into a remarkable and amazing recovery. I believe you were in coma for several days. Tell us about this life-changing experience for you, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. So I went into something called high altitude post-operative pulmonary edema. It's a tongue twister. Long story short, my heart stopped. My lung exploded. I had a hole in my heart. They don't know how it happened. They got me down to the trauma center. And in the trauma center, they were able to stabilize me and put me into a medically induced coma. During all of that, my heart stopped. They had to revive me. I was supposed to wake up brain dead because I was only operating on 36% oxygen for hours. So when I woke up from the coma, I didn't know how to read, write, or speak. I knew mentally how to do everything, but I couldn't physically do it. So I couldn't form a sentence. I couldn't spell. I couldn't read anything. So I worked as hard as I could. Obviously, I have my speech back. I'm still working on reading and writing. My handwriting is terrible. Reading is still very difficult for me. But I had, once I woke up from a coma, I had 3 months to recover and get back into shape for snowboarding, which the doctors told me I would never snowboard again. I said, thanks for the challenge, but I will snowboard again. And I came back and I won 11 out of the 13 races and podiumed 12 out of the 13 races. Wow. I almost had an undefeated season that year.
Wow, very, very impressive.
Yeah.
Now, if I may ask, you said you had to learn to speak again. How long it took before you could talk normally as you are doing right now?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was able to talk decently within a year, but to get it all back completely took me 2 years. But even to this day, I still struggle with it. Like, I don't know if sometimes you see I kind of like take a second, I have to like take a deep breath. It's because I'm at a loss for the words. I can't find the words in my head. Or if I get put in a really high stress situation, my speech goes away. Or I'll lose train of thought. I'll forget my mom's, like, not my mom, but like, I'll forget my brother's name or I'll forget people's names when they're standing in front of me. It's just sometimes it's hard for me to collect my thoughts and get my words out. I know what I want to say and I know what I need to say, but I can't get it out. So in high stress situations or if I'm really tired, my speech goes away.
Now, you have also jumped from planes and hot air balloons. Of all the crazy things you have done, which one has given you the biggest thrill?
It's hard to say. I think the biggest thrill I get is either if I'm in a really hard battle in the race car at the Olympics, and flying my wingsuits out of planes gives me a pretty good thrill. Put myself in such high adrenaline, high stress situations that I kind of become very passive in these situations that, like, I'm always searching for something more because I do it two or three times and then it becomes normal to me. Like, when I'm skydiving, I'm in the plane, I like take a nap on the way up. Or like in the race car, my heart rate drops once the green, my heart rate rises before green flag, but then right before the green flag drops, my heart rate drops and I'm actually really calm.
Oh, very interesting. Now, I'm assuming since you're going to the Singapore Grand Prix, you're a big F1 fan also?
Yeah, of course. I enjoy F1. I like watching it. I'm a fan, especially this year. I kind of lost a lot of passion for it the last 4 years because it wasn't really racing. It was who spent more money. But this year with the new development of the cars, there's actually some really good racing coming back. It's not just strategy. It also really comes down to driving and racing. So I've become more involved and a bigger fan recently.
Have you been to the U.S. Grand Prix in Texas?
I have never been to COTA. I've been to the track, but I've never seen the race.
I will highly recommend. Okay, now we've had two great Formula One races so far this season. Do you have a favorite team and favorite driver in this series?
Yeah, I'm a huge Red Bull fan. I really like Red Bull. I really like Max. I really like how aggressive he is. I just like his personality. I'm going to race as hard as I can, and if you don't like it, I'm sorry. Like, because I'm a huge fan of James Hunt. Like, James Hunt is probably my favorite driver of all time. And second to that is Fernando Alonso. But James Hunt was, I'm not out there to make friends. I'm out there to win races. And after the race, you want to party and have fun, let's do it. But when I'm on track, I'm a killer. And I like the on-track killer instincts, and I think Max has it.
Oh, yes. He is overflowing with talent and killer instinct, that's for sure. Yeah. Now, 2022, who do you think will be world champion, Max or Leclerc?
Oh, that's so hard. Ferraris are really consistent, and they're really fast. I feel like the Red Bulls are being turned up to 120% to try to compete with the Ferraris. But you can't take away from what Red Bull can do. I'm going to go with, I want Max to do it, but I'm not confident in that decision.
Yeah.
I want him to do it, but I'm not confident in it.
You know, most drivers need a superior car to win the world championship. Max is one of the few drivers who can win the championship with a competitive car. It doesn't have to be the best car.
I don't think Red Bull has the best car right now.
That Ferrari looks fast and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and it's easy on the tires. If you notice, the last two races, over a long stint, the Ferrari just goes away. Where really, I think Max won this last race due to a nice caution.
Okay. And going back to your trip to Singapore, are you going to be there the whole weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or just fly in for the race and bail out?
No, I'll be there the whole weekend. We're meeting some partners there. So.
Okay, that's good. Well, I hope you have a great time. Now, when is your next race?
Laguna Seca is our next race on the 27th to the 30th.
Okay. Do you have any races on the East Coast?
We do. We have Watkins Glen.
When is your Watkins Glen race?
And we also have Lime Rock, Watkins Glen. Watkins Glen is the 22nd to the 26th. And then we have Mossport after that in Canada.
Yeah. Which month is Watkins Glen when you gave me the dates?
June 23rd to the 25th.
Okay. I'm a big fan of history of motor racing. I've been to Lime Rock. I've been to Mossport. But I've never been to Road America and Watkins Glen. And my goal for this year, like you have your goals, is I want to make sure that I visit these two tracks. And the racing junkie I am, there doesn't have to be a race for me to go and enjoy the place. So I will try to make it to your race in June at Watkins Glen, so this way we can see your race. Now, you folks are with IMSA Sports Car, or do you do support races with other series also?
No, we are just IMSA Sports Car.
Yeah, I might come there for the June race and check out the Glen.
The Watkins Glen is an endurance race for the WeatherTech cars as well.
Yeah. Interesting, very interesting. Okay, now I appreciate your time. We always request our guests to tell about your how people can follow your career, your website, your social media.
Yeah, you can follow me on my website, ajmuss.com, or you can always reach me or stay tuned on my Instagram. It's at ajmuss. Simple.
And we have listeners all over the world. Would you have a message for them?
Message for everyone around the world, enjoy life. Life's too short. Life's one of the great pleasures, and to live every day like it's your last and just enjoy the ride. The ride is what you remember, not the highs or the lows.
That's very true. Okay, man, AJ, thank you so much. I really appreciate.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care, young man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
AJ, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nas, keep up the good work. Another outstanding one. And now let's go right into the the excitement of Joseph Newgarden. I mean, wow, that was a great race.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Long Beach Grand Prix, I remember when it was first announced as a Formula One race in the 70s, obviously I had heard of Los Angeles, but I had never heard of Long Beach. So I had to grab a map and take a look at it, see where it was. And then I remember telling my brother, oh, it's very close to L.A. So, but, you know, I think Formula One left in 1983. But, you know, Mr. Rogers, this shows you how popular Formula One can be in California and Florida, especially Miami. After Formula One left Long Beach, it took IndyCar several years to get up to the same numbers people coming in for the F1 races. But the race on Sunday, Colton Herta, who is from SoCal, took the pole, and he was sort of like on his way to victory till he found the California Wall of Voodoo and dropped out. And this allowed Mr. Man from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden, to win the race and take the championship lead. Now, this is 3-for-3 for Penske Racing. You know, like Ferrari team, last year Penske Racing was not doing very well. This season they have won all three races, so kudos to the people working for Captain. Romain Grosjean was a close second with Alex Palou third, and Alex Palou was all over Grosjean, and that's the way it goes. Sir, have you ever been to any of the IndyCar or Formula One races at Long Beach?
I have not, sir.
I have been to a lot of Long Beach Grand Prix IndyCar races. I will highly recommend if you get a chance. And, you know, last year I was supposed to go there. I even made it to Cali. And then I was going to meet a couple of our F1 Weekly Familia members, Mr. Eric Fernandez and Tech Talk. And at the last minute, I was suffering from food poisoning. But these things happen. But I do miss that event. It's a very nice place. You know, it's like for Indy cars, it's the biggest event or the biggest high-profile event after the Indy 500. So that makes... I would love to see Formula One come back. And I was thinking, what are the chances of Formula One and IndyCar doing a doubleheader? Is that possible?
Nope.
That will be something, you know. Anyway, moving on to MotoGP from Austin, Texas. Enea Bastianini Ducati, Honor Ducati, won the race. Second was Alex Rins for Suzuki. Aussie mate Jack Miller was third on a Ducati. Honda man Marc Marquez was at the back of the field going into turn one on the opening lap, but fell back to claim sixth. So that was pretty impressive. And I was able to watch this race and I really enjoyed it. Okay, sir, would we have time for my trip to South Carolina?
Sure, why not?
Well, you know, first of all, I have driven to D.C. to visit my sister a few times. And the drive from here through Jacksonville, Savannah, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, the drive is just beautiful. You drive, listen to music, beautiful tall trees all along the highway. So it's very nice. I saw a posting. Some lady had just posted a sort of a sale of Auto Course yearbooks for many, many years. And so I gave her a call. We talked. And she told me her husband used to work for Arrows, March, ATS, Brabham. And she knew a lot of drivers going back to the days of names like Mike Butler, Ronnie Peterson, Carlos Pache, Derek Daly, a lot of people. Gunnar Nielsen used to stay with them. So I said, you know, I'm going to come over and you have a lot of stories. We will record a conversation. And so she agreed. So I went there and recorded this conversation, which we will play, which I really enjoyed next week. So I hope our listeners will give it a listen and see how they like it. So there you have it, sir. A little weekend update for you. And anything else you want to talk about, sir? Anything other series or anything else?
Well, no, that was exciting. I can't wait for Imola. That's always a great track. Fernando likes this track, so you never know. We might see a podium out of him. But Red Bull really needs to bounce back and actually win this next Grand Prix, or it's going to start looking funny, and then the tempers are going to start flaring up, and it won't be the happy camp that we loved so much last year.
And why does Alonso like this track?
Because his camping chair is sold at this track.
It must be the 2005 race, right?
Bravo. It could be, you know.
That's one of the greatest race victories of all time for me.
Yeah, and he always takes Mick Schumacher out for breakfast when they're at Imola.
Oh, really? Yeah, interesting. That was very, very impressive. But I have to say, the following year, Michael Schumacher returned the favor. But, you know, but when Alonso won, he was young and Michael was at the top of his game. That victory was just absolutely incredible. So we will see how it works out. But I have when you were talking about Red Bull needs to bounce back, if Leclerc gets 5 or 6 wins, which can happen by Monaco, and let's not forget, that's his home track, that's where he lives. If he gets 5 or 6 wins and Max is still sitting on 1, then dishes will be done for Max.
Yep, Max will be done, but he'll still have that big paycheck. It's cleared, it's cashed, everything's okay.
And the thing is, you know, that most likely Red Bull will pair up with Porsche when VW decides to come in. He may run into a situation, Max, with Honda gone and early years of Porsche, he may run into a situation that Lewis ran at McLaren after winning his first championship, or Michael Schumacher ran at Ferrari after winning back-to-back championships at Benetton. So this, concept of having luck, it's not just luck, but when you get that luck, lucky seat, you got to make the most of it. And he will. There's no question in my mind about that. Okay, sir. Speaking of Lewis Hamilton,
Shall we do famous last words for today?
My favorite.
Today they come from a man who was welcomed to the world of winning by Ron Dennis at the Hungaro Ring. I'm sure you remember that. And of course that is Heikki Kovalainen. And he was talking about his McLaren teammate when he won that race, and we all know who that was. And this is what he said, and I will quote Mr. Covey. His level of performance is so high that even for super talents like Max, it requires a lot of effort, a lot of focus, a lot of energy, so it's not going to be easy. Not everyone can handle that. It's as simple as that. End quote. And I say, welcome to what Jim Cramer on Mad Money says, House of Pain. There you have it, Mr. Rogers.
Outstanding, Nasser. Keep up the good work. So I'm looking forward to next week's interview, and I hope you get some rest. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.